You are listening to the In Defense of Plants podcast, a show designed to cure plant blindness around the globe. Support for In Defense of Plants comes from listener donations. For instance, today's episode was produced in part by Clifton, Letitia, Ron, Carl, Tim, Lisa, Susanna, Homestead Brooklyn, Brody, Kevin, Sophia, Plant by Design, Mark, Katharina, Sammy and Sven, Renz, Bendix, Aaron A., Holly, Mountain Misery Farms, Caitlin, Rosanna, Manuel, Jennifer, Sarah, and Margie. If you would like to give your support to In Defense of Plants, please consider becoming a patron over at patreon.com/indefenseofplants, and together we can help cure plant blindness one episode at a time.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the In Defense of Plants podcast, the official podcast of indefenseofplants.com. What's up? This is your host, Matt. Welcome to the show. How's everyone doing this week? As you can hear, we're doing something a little bit different with the Patreon supporters. The list of names was getting very long, and I figured we'd switch it up for you. So thanks to the wonderful Sarah Johnson, who you heard read those off. And again, patreon.com/indefenseofplants. Consider supporting us. But what do we have for you this week? I just returned from 6 days at the wonderful Second International Orchid Bee Symposium. It was a fantastic time. We were stationed at the La Gamba Field Station in Golfito, Costa Rica, and it was my first time ever really exploring lowland tropical forests, and what an experience it was. Way hotter and muggier than I ever expected, and I think I've romanticized doing work in the tropics for far too long, and this was my real first experience of doing anything physical in that kind of environment. And my hat is off to all of the people doing research down there. It must be a specific challenge to have to overcome some of that weather, I guess would be the best way to put it. But obviously all that heat and humidity and water means lots of wonderful plant diversity, and boy did I meet a lot of interesting plant species this week. It was incredible, and the best part about it was I was surrounded by botanists and entomologists that study orchids that have entered into a relationship with these orchid bees, the euglossin bees. Now, there will be more on this later, but essentially the males of these bees collect fragrances from flowers, ranging from orchids to aroids and a handful of plants in between. And they're not quite sure what they do with them. They put them into the little pouches on the back of their hind legs, and they create these chemical concoctions, these perfume concoctions, that they then are using to maybe attract males, assess dominance, or eventually to woo females. They're not really sure, and that's the wonderful thing about science, is you can be very familiar with the system and still have plenty of questions to ask about it. I can't speak highly enough of the intellect and the passion of all the people I met, and you're going to hear a lot of interviews coming up from that symposium, so stay tuned for those. Today is something a little more casual. It's an introduction to this ecosystem. This is a hike I took with botanist Dr. Mark Witten, who's been on this podcast a couple of times before, and I can't really think of anyone to introduce me to this ecotype than Dr. Mark Witten. He has done lots of exploration and plant studies in the tropics. He himself kind of set the foundation for a lot of orchid fragrance work, and he's just a passionate botanizer. One thing I've noticed about the tropics is that it's easy to feel overwhelmed. You go down there and you probably feel in a very similar way to what most people feel when they go outside and see a wall of green. They just go, oh, where do I even begin? Or don't even notice that there are differences. And I have to admit, especially as it relates to tropical trees, I'm clueless. So to be with someone that kind of knows the flora and can identify things was just a fantastic experience. And you're going to hear all of that today, including just the wonderful background noise of hiking in this lowland tropical forest. And again, there's plenty of more interviews dealing with some of the specific research that I got to experience while being down there. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this hike through the forest. We're out here in some lowland Costa Rican forests, just doing a casual hike, taking a break from the Orchid Bee Symposium. I'm with Dr. Mark Witten. Say hello, Mark.
Hey.
And this is going to be another casual hiking podcast because why not expose you to some of the sounds and describe some of the sights that we're seeing. Already we're finding plenty of amazing things. What kind of cactus was that we just saw?
I would guess an epiphyllum, but I don't know cactus genera around here.
I think there's going to be a lot of the
a flat epiphytic cactus.
It's a walking palm right here. Doing its best Ent impression. It's Today is going to be hiking and botanizing casually. One of the common themes of hiking in the any sort of tropical rainforest is just finally seeing some of the most beloved houseplants growing in the wild as they evolve to do. Right now we're surrounded by lots of philodendron vines and a few Diefenbachia. And I gotta say, they're quite interesting in the wild. You'll hear from a researcher later in an episode about his work on the pollination of these incredible aroids, but
here's one of his study plants.
Yeah, actually, it's what's funny being by a research station is sometimes they identify things.
This is the philodendron CF. Assenblatt, I can't read it.
I just like how you kind of get this trailing vine that you used to see in your home, and then all of a sudden it hits its stride in the canopy and just becomes this fan of giant tropical looking leaves. You're going to hear a lot of cameras. Now, another thing we're seeing is what we think might be a Markgravia vine, although nothing's in flower yet. So can't be sure.
Matt, these two largest canopy trees adjacent to us have strangler figs growing up their trunks.
And this one's finally reached to the ground.
And it looks like the top of it is up in the canopy too, so
this tree will be eventually strangled out as the roots now have access to more soil nutrients.
There's another one over
here. Wow, yeah. Of course, the strangler fig germinates in the crux of a branch or something, and then its roots gradually grow down, and then once it does hit the soil, it just chokes out the tree it's living on. And oftentimes in older forests you can see, we're going to interrupt you, the hummingbird is visiting the hot lips. Uh-huh. The genus is
used to be Cephalus, and now I think it's Psychotria.
So it's got these bracts on either side of the inflorescence that make it look like a big kissy
plastic wax lip.
Yeah.
But the other thing we've been seeing a lot of that are hemiepiphytic are Blakeyas in the mellowstone family, which have gorgeous flowers.
They do.
They get started on a tree limb about midway up or on the trunk and get their roots down to the ground and then turn into often what looks like a tree.
Yeah.
But they get started up in the canopy or midway up.
In fact, I, for the longest time, just thought they were a tree. And so hemiepiphytic means they're not parasitic. They're just sort of living on the bark of a tree, but eventually grow
into the ground.
Kind of like the strangler fig, although the strangler fig, like we said, eventually strangles its host. And oftentimes you'll see a large strangler fig that's kind of a latticed work cast of the tree it was once growing on. It's pretty impressive. There's a lot of litter trapping palms. You'll remember from many episodes ago I talked to Dr. Scott Zona about plants that collect their own detritus and essentially make their own compost to grow in. Of course, this is a nutrient impoverished habitat. Most of the nutrients are either absorbed or leached out of the soils, so if you can make your own, why not?
I'm still thinking about the walking stick we saw at breakfast. It's so incredibly camouflaged that now I'm wondering how much other stuff we're just walking right by and missing completely.
To put it in perspective, this is a walking stick that's probably 6 to 7 inches long, but it looks just like a stick covered in moss and filmy ferns.
It looks like it's covered in moss and selaginella.
Yeah, and had someone not pointed it out to me, I would not have picked it out of the mass of vegetation. And the troubling part is some of the vipers are pretty well camouflaged, so I'm always cautious of where I'm stepping and what leaves I'm pulling out and looking under. So
some sort of flower on the ground with a fused
You should
column.
Recognize that, being
that
from
a,
the Midwest.
Asclepiadaceae, or yes. Apocynaceae?
Yeah.
Really?
It looks just like a milkweed flower,
yeah.
But something up in the canopy.
With much larger, I guess those are petals, instead of hoods, like Asclepias would have. It's got kind of white fringed petals.
Something way up there.
It's tough in the rainforest. Everything kind of happens up in the canopy, so you never quite know where it's coming from when you finally do find something laying on the ground.
I can't see it. The thing that's impressive is how much herbivory damage there is to a lot of the foliage. It must be a really tough environment to be a plant. Everything's trying to eat you.
And the other part of it is I've only seen a handful.
Look at this fern. You know, ferns generally we don't think of as having a lot of herbivory on them. This one is almost reduced to lace.
It looks like it's been leaf mined with just the cuticular layers on the outside of it.
Indeed.
Yeah. Whoa, a giant damselfly. It just landed. I have to take a picture. Come. Sorry about that. It was a giant damselfly. I had to take a picture. What is this, Mark?
Let's see. Well, you tell me the family of the plant.
That's Araceae.
Araceae, and that's an infructescence. It's largely orange with a bunch of red berry-like fruits on it. You can see that the spathe has kind of shredded.
Opened up like a capsule.
Florian to tell us
what exactly that is. Many of which we can't see, but we sure can hear them. Kind of at a clay mud flat right here, and there's lots of bees collecting, if you can hear it. Mark sees someone. Oh, that's a fuzzy caterpillar. Oh my. Looks like it would put a hurt on you if you touched it. Another group I've been kind of enamored with since we got down here is the Cyclanthaceae. These superficially resemble palms.
Yeah. We saw some, I think, Trigona bees working the inflorescence of one of the cyclanths the other morning, collecting lots and lots of pollen.
There was plenty to go around.
The other thing that is common here that I really like is that epiphytic Camelinaceae.
Yeah. Picture a Tradescantia relative that's more shaped like a tank bromeliad than a wandering Jew or something like that.
Cochleostema.
Yeah.
Lovely blue flowers, and I think they look like they're probably buzz pollinated, but some of the Costa Ricans here were telling me that I don't think anyone's ever studied the pollination of them.
Really?
Really potent fragrance.
Oh, one of the best I've smelled.
Really sweet.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good thesis project for somebody.
Listen up, potential grad students. We had pretty much locally made chocolate the other night, you know, truly roasted and ground up the traditional way, and boy, was that a completely different experience from the chocolate I'm used to in the States.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was delicious and kind of, it was soft like fudge, but more grainy. It was a great experience. Milk chocolate doesn't really compare. Now we've just come across one of the star orchids of this weekend's focus, a Stanhopia, which you studied for a while.
Yeah. And we've actually seen a moderate number of these growing. I guess these are about 3-4 meters up a slender tree.
Deep
none,
shade.
None in flower.
No.
But the plants are not all that common, and then finding one in flower is even more uncommon. I've had people call me up and say, oh, I want to film Stanhopia being pollinated. And it's like, well, find some in a garden. Actually finding them in the wild in an accessible tree is a pretty rare thing.
But let alone finding one ready to receive visitors. Now, they produce resin or oils or fragrance of some sort?
They're fragrance reward. They're members of the Stanhopeae, and all, I don't know, 650 species, maybe 700, are fragrance rewards. They don't secrete pollen or nectar. All they do is secrete a powerful fragrance, and it's collected by male euglossine bees that are deeply interested in collecting fragrances and will spend many minutes doing this behavior, and in the process the flowers get pollinated. Mm. And that's one of the things we're here at this conference for, is talking about euglossine bees as pollinators.
What I think is interesting is that when you read about it in popular media, they say they're using it to attract females, but in reality it seems like we're still kind of on the fence exactly what the function of it is, if it's impressing other males or sorting out dominance to then have access to females.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has conclusively proven the role of the fragrances, but they're not pheromone precursors, and they're obviously involved intimately in the bees' reproductive cycle somehow, because they spend so much time and energy collecting fragrances.
To the point where you can blot some fragrance on a napkin, which I will be posting videos of, and attract males that just kind of go after these blotting papers. It's kind of fun to watch. Gotta
see if that's the other species found now.
What genera?
Anthurium.
This is an anthurium, so an aroid. It's got a large
spadix
coming up there. And ooh, nice, pretty little cockroach.
But a lot of anthuriums are pollinated by fragrance-collecting male euglossine bees. They have pretty powerful fragrances.
Yeah, so we've smelled two in the last couple of days. That one was incredibly spicy, and the other one was more like a guava smell. It's powerful. And kind of intoxicating. So
I'm sure you'll hear more about that from Florian.
Yes, I love that we're hyping this conversation, because it was such a fantastic interview. So I'll be excited for y'all to hear that in the coming weeks, among others, of course. Hey Mark, over here is one of Florian's exclusion experiments on a spathiphyllum, but one of the spathiphyllum inflorescences is open and not bagged up to exclude pollinators.
Exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Controlled to keep out insects of certain size, anyway.
Helps you understand who is truly pollinating. One of those cameras.
Everywhere you go here, there are cameras, recording devices, it's not like you can be out in the woods. And
it's made me think
like
twice about where I go to relieve myself, that's for sure.
Be careful.
Yeah. Really awkward moment to end up in someone's thesis data in a rather uninspiring way. Look at the buttresses on that beast. The color.
I've never seen kind of scallop.
Yeah, so it's a large tree with cinnamon-colored bark, large buttress roots, and they're very, scalloped would be the best way to describe it.
I can't even tell even what family.
Now, one of the best ways to know what's going on up in the canopy is to find yourself a downed stick or a tree. Because without ladders or some sort of crane, that's about the only way you're going to see what's going on up here. So right here we have a stick that has fallen with some sort of epiphytic ericad. Or maybe is this Ericaceae or Jezzenariaceae?
No, that's Ericaceae. So, a little blueberry relative.
Cousin of the blueberries grown in the canopy. And here's some... Oh, those are ferns, not pleurothallids. But there are orchids here. What are those?
So these are Scaphiglottis.
Scaphiglottis orchids.
Little tiny flowers, but really tough. And again, you would never find them growing down here at this level. We're down by a creek in a very moist, shaded environment. And a lot of people, you know, enjoy hiking in areas like this, but you really see very few orchids because they're all up in the treetops. And the only way to see them is if you have a tree fall.
Yeah.
Which we did.
We
find
did
yesterday and found some Masdevallias with little tiny Drosophilid flies visiting the flowers.
Yeah, that was pretty remarkable. That was another thing I learned, is that people associate orchids and bees, but in reality, I think that someone said the thing is about 50% of orchids are pollinated by flies.
Yeah.
Of one form or another.
And even we're talking to Adam Caramans from Lancaster Botanical Gardens, and he was saying that even some of the bright red and orange Masdevallia orchids from the Andes, which everyone has always assumed are pollinated by hummingbirds, no, they're pollinated by little tiny flies.
Yeah.
So,
in fact, he said one of the more pendulant morphologies might actually be to protect the flower parts.
The dorsal sepal kind of flops in the way to keep those stupid hummingbirds from doing damage.
Darn hummingbirds. Curious little beasts. Violent little beasts at that.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, that there's so much hypothesizing and so many assumptions about pollination relationships, and relatively few people do the hard work of actually documenting things.
And it is hard work. One of the researchers the other day was talking about how he's been studying and could not figure out this pollination mechanism of this plant in the genus Delcampia, and he said it was because he finally realized after so many years that the flowers were only opening after he called it quits and went to the bar in the evening. It's hard work. Hug your resident pollination ecologist. Now, we mentioned Cyclanthaceae earlier, which is probably esoteric reference for most, but some of you may actually know them and not realize it as...
They have them in your closet and not realize it.
That's true. If you've ever gone to and did the touristy sort of buying a hat somewhere.
So the Cyclanthaceae include the plants that are used to make Panama hats. They have fibers that are harvested from the leaves and prepared and then used to weave Panama hats. And you probably heard the story that the finest quality Panama hats can actually be folded and rolled up and passed through a wedding ring.
Wow.
And shook out again.
Testament to the fibers.
Yeah, I'm amazed at how common Cyclanthaceae are here.
Yeah, so there's terrestrial ones, there's epiphytic ones, which I think is that one right up there with that fishtail-shaped leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you'd be excused for the most part thinking they were palms at first.
Yeah, they look like palms.
Ooh. See what I see on that little rotten branch there?
Yeah.
Dykia.
An orchid. It's in the Zygopetalum group of orchids, the genus Dykia. And look beside it here. The flowers are a bit faded, but a really nice gesneriad, terrestrial gesneriad. Looks kind of like a gloxinia, but I wouldn't guarantee the genus.
Fuzzy, a whorl of leaves at the tip of a little stem there, and then the flowers are tubular, but they bend down immediately out of the calyx, and sort of at the tip kind of bend out.
Looks
horizontally.
Like a foxglove.
Yeah,
a
foxglove. Picture a foxglove. There you go.
And cacti being in rainforest.
No, you definitely don't think of cacti as rainforest, but again, many people will be familiar with rainforest cacti in the form of Schlumbergia, but here
Christmas
we have
cactus.
Epiphyllus or something, but this is
epiphyllum.
Whoops.
Oxypetalum.
Large, so, flattened stems.
And again, we're down here along a creek in very moist, dark, wet forest, and you're never going to see these unless they fall out of the treetops because they grow in large limbs, largely in the sun.
There's one dangling right now in a clearing off of a...
Again, it's fallen out of a tree.
And it's hit one of those Blakeia, actually. There's the hemiepiphytic Blakeia there with those...
And there's a Stanhopia in that clump,
Yes,
too.
There is!
Wow. A veritable garden of horticultural delight in one little tree limb.
Yeah. I mean, one could really make a business, an ethical orchid harvesting business, by picking up ones that have fallen on the ground that are just destined to rot away and die. Ooh, fruits and some sort of vine. Like a... If I didn't know better, I'd say it was bignonia.
Nope, they're three-parted.
Winged.
And just above us, actually, in the canopy, is a cecropia tree.
If you remember back to my conversation with soon-to-be Dr. Peter Marting from Arizona State, you'll know that those trees associate with ants. They house ant colonies in their nests and their stems, and the ants defend them viciously. I've already heard a few horror stories of people that have accidentally bumped into them while doing their research and been covered in angry Azteca ants. Apparently it's not an experience one wants to have more than once. Giant Cyclanthaceae now above us with a very palmate, both as in the hand and as looks like a palm leaves. But the fruits are really interesting because it starts off like what looks like a spadix on an aroid, but then from the tip it kind of peels back and reveals this bright orange interior with dark seeds embedded in it.
Very showy presentation of the seeds.
Especially in this dark, largely green understory, I can see that really showing up for an anolis. Lots of lizards down here. Got another orchid, again, coming off of a branch from much higher up, but this is...
Just a tiny twig falling out of the...
I mean, the twig is smaller in diameter than my pinky finger, to give it perspective, but this is Astellus, a genus of orchid with these oddly flattened flowers.
The whole plant is smaller than, you know, the distal portion of my thumb, but the inflorescences are about long as your index finger. Mm. Little purple flowers.
Very flattened.
Triangular sepals.
Do we know what pollinates these, or suspect?
Again, I'm not sure how much is actually known. You'll have to ask Adam, but presumed to be some sort of fly.
It's one of those things where I just want to find them and stick them somewhere so they don't die.
Well, you know,
it's going to be a tough go at it, but yeah, wedge it in between a vine. There you go. Wow, it's liverworts. It's so humid here that liverworts can just come off of the trees in profusion and not desiccate. But they are desiccation tolerant. There is obviously a measurable dry season here. We take advantage of the best of both worlds.
Up top it looks like there's a... Is it an anthurium? Epiphytic anthurium?
Taking advantage of the dead crown, getting as much light as it can possibly get.
But I could comfortably sit cross-legged on one of those leaves. That's how big they are.
Oh, Mark's tempting fate next to a cecropia tree there. Now, I'm a very tactile person. I like to reach out and touch things. But one thing I always have to keep in mind down here is that... Ooh, an orchid.
Oh, there's Scapiglottis.
Yeah. One thing to always keep in mind is that under any broad leaf could be hiding a wasp's nest. And those wasps would be mighty upset with me. So I have to rein it in, so to speak, anytime there's an issue with me wanting to touch something. Small clearing here. Clearings are always interesting because that's where more light gets in. But it looks like the understory is dominated by this little airway that could be a Diefenbachia. Some larger ferns.
I think that's a bulbophyllum.
Wait, there's bulbophyllum in...
Yeah, there are new tropical bulbophyllums too.
Wow.
That's my guess. I'm not absolutely
I mean, it
certain.
Looks like it with those paired leaves and the bulbs kind of take on a...
And kind of a elongated rhizome.
Yeah.
There are not many other things here that have elongated rhizomes, so...
It's true. The other great thing about the tropics is you can just kind of throw things in a little nook, and if they like humidity, there's a good chance they're going to continue to grow. That orchid will live to see another day.
One of the things that I saw here a few years ago, I was hoping to find again, something that looks like it's out of the movie Avatar, is a fungus that forms webs in the understory, just huge networks, and it traps leaf litter. Your leaves fall into it and are trapped just like a hammock, and then the fungus grows into the leaves and it forms this just big aerial web of of fungi.
I hope we see that.
It was really impressive. And so, I haven't seen it again so far this trip.
So the competition for nutrients on the forest floor is so strong that it just said, screw it. I'm going to capture it before it even gets down there.
Yeah, get it before the
amazing
floor fungi do.
Wow, I do hope we see that. I'm amazed that I have such trouble with tree taxonomy back in Illinois, and in one square hectare of this forest there's more trees than probably in the whole state. Biodiversity, people. We're gonna play a little game here, mostly a game for me. We're looking at a herbaceous plant, but it's tall, probably about
a knee high.
Yeah. And opposite world leaves, green stem with lots of nodes, and clusters of fruit on spikes.
Both flowers and fruit.
Oh, yeah, both flowers.
Little tiny white flowers. How many?
Four petals, tubular. That, to me, screams rubiaceae.
So, look at the young nodes.
Ah.
Are there interpetiole or stipules?
Indeed there are.
So, I think
rubiaceae. Yay.
Lots of rubiaceae here.
Safe to say, if you threw a dart, you'd probably hit one. Rubiaceae, of course, for those not taxonomically inclined, is the coffee family, or at least the family that gives us coffee. To call it the coffee family would be kind of forgetting the fact that it's just so many other genera.
You can see the roots going out on the bark of the host. You know, it's
is this an arrow?
Yeah, it's probably an anthurium. And it's truly epiphytic. And the other thing, you can see the start of these upward pointing roots trash baskets. So that's, you know, like the beginning of a trash basket.
And it is
lifestyle.
Collecting
and
leaves.
It's got lots of dead leaves there already.
That's awesome, because we generally think of the biological stimulus for roots being to go down, and this one is obviously violating that for nutrient acquisition. Well, everyone, I think this was a wonderful little hike. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to Mark Witten for being our tour guide. Thanks, Mark.
Always a pleasure.
Adios, everyone. All right, I'm getting nostalgic just hearing that again. It was incredible. I think the tropics are just a playground for anyone that's interested in plant diversity, insect, any sort of biodiversity. That is where it hits its peak, and it's overwhelming, but it's inspiring, and boy, do we need to work to protect it. I thank Mark for taking me on that hike. It was great to learn from him. I learned about a lot of new plant species in the process. You can see that years of experience really tighten your relationship with these sorts of habitats. I've got a lot of great interviews coming up from the Orchid Bee Symposium. I met so many different people and a wide range of topics. It's not just orchids and bees specific, but you'll see all that in the weeks to come. I thank you for listening. The best way to stay up to date with In Defense of Plants is to hit that subscribe button. That way you get all of these episodes as they are released.
In the meantime, I hope you all have a fantastic week. Get out there, get botanizing. It's spring in the Northern Hemisphere, albeit it's coming quite slowly for most of us, but there's still some plants poking out. Get out there and enjoy. Until next week, this is your host, Matt, signing out. Adios, everyone.